This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon, on today's roundtable, are HBCUs in danger of fading away, and the Da Vinci Code has some Catholics outraged? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our New York Bureau, Pedro Noguera. He's a professor of education at New York University. Also with us, Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com. He joins us from KISS FM in New York. And from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Republican strategist Tara Settmeyer is with us. All right, folks, here we go. We want to talk about a panel that was convened within the last week or so by the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights to examine the educational effectiveness of historically black colleges and universities. The panel concluded that HBCUs are vital in providing the foundation for career success among disadvantaged minorities. But many on the panel were concerned that the debate post-segregation America continues over whether or not historically black colleges, in fact, should remain. One of the panelists suggested that the biggest threat, the greatest threat facing HBCUs is the illegal duplication of existing academic programs by nearby predominantly white institutions. Pedro, we should note that this kind of duplication has been done before, and what it does is that it leaves academic programs underfunded, and it also violates an equal protection provision in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. You deal with these kinds of issues all the time. Do you believe this to be one of, or as the panel says, the greatest threat to HBCUs?
Well, I think it's clearly a threat because many of these other institutions have much more financial support and could provide greater assistance to their students, which places the HBCUs at a disadvantage. But I think the larger question facing the HBCUs is their own financial stability, their continued ability to attract students and support faculty. Many of the institutions are in real trouble. We saw one of the great ones, Morris Brown, recently experienced great financial difficulties. So I would say many of them are in challenged, and I think the need to revisit the mission, who are we educating, how do we do it, is, I think, a pertinent one. Grambling, interestingly, had a white quarterback not long ago, which surprised many people. And I do think the need to embrace a broad diversity of students is one that these institutions are going to have to confront.
Walter, when you take a look at the idea, as Pedro Noguera suggests, the financial stability of many of these institutions, save the idea that many people understood the importance the week that the telethon that the late Lou Rawls had every year in sending in money. Outside of that, I've heard publicly and especially behind closed doors grumblings from these universities that they are not receiving monies from alumni or the community.
It's a challenge. I mean, I'm an alum of Morgan State University, and we certainly have become a very stable institution, but still are faced with some challenges. In fact, duplication is one of them. We recently fought the duplication of an MBA program, I believe it was at the University of Baltimore, in downtown Baltimore, that Dr. Earl Richardson, the president of Morgan, fought vehemently against, but the state commission gave the okay. And over 50% of all graduate students at Morgan State are white. The graduate programs are overwhelmingly white, and they've been attracting people. So I think there are a subset of historically black colleges, the smaller schools, that are facing some financial difficulties. I think alums often don't do enough. But we do have a number of very stable institutions that are on the cusp of becoming major institutions, black, white, or otherwise. And I think what happens in a lot of these states, you have a lot of politics going on in state capitals that are now encroaching upon the ability of these institutions to realize their full potential.
We should note, Tara, that there are a number of states, including Ohio, Virginia, Maryland, Texas, and others, who have been non-compliant in the idea of not duplicating these kinds of classes, courses, etc.
I think what you're seeing is a consequence of competition because you have universities are competing for students. And on the shorter end of the stick, unfortunately, are the smaller historically black colleges. I think it's important to recognize, though, that this administration and this president has been extremely supportive of HBCUs. He's recognized the diverse education needs that these colleges offer, and he's increased funding over 30% to historically black colleges for reasons just like this, for investment in infrastructure, for new technology, for development, just to maintain long-term viability. Now, the flip side of this is that there may come a time when some of these institutions may no longer have a place in to a certain degree if they cannot sustain themselves and cannot maintain high education curriculums, and I think that may be unfortunate.
This isn't about politics or competition. You know, it is about politics in the sense that most of these schools, particularly state universities in these individual southern states, are faced with some very harsh opposition from state legislators. And regardless of what this current administration of the White House has done, these schools have been under assault. And they are attempting to compete, but you can't compete when you're constantly underfunded.
And which is why the administration has increased funding 30%. They recognize
that. But it's not a federal issue.
All right, guys, listen, I cannot get caught up on the political end like the good Republican strategist she is. She got the Bush administration's take in there. Pedro, I've got to move on to the other side.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that where the Bush administration's really let all college students down is not supporting Pell Grants, which only cover about 25% of the cost of college today.
All right. That can be a debate and fight, Tara, for another
day.
I've got to get these other topics in. All right.
Yes.
Here's something that is akin to the problem of education this country faces. About half of all the new teachers within 5 years will quit. This comes from a study of the Union for the National Education Association. Half of U.S. teachers, again, within 5 years will quit, many of them suggesting that the poor working conditions and low salaries are the reason why. Walter Fields, when we see this, when we hear about this, this really speaks to the idea that I've said for a long time when we talk about the children are our future. That's a bunch of bunk in the United States. We've talked about low wages for teachers for decades now. Nothing has changed.
You know, you're absolutely right. I have two sisters who are school teachers. In fact, one was Teacher of the Year in Rochester, New York, about 4 years ago. And it's really troubling when you watch what's happening to the teaching profession, that you have good people who are educated, have the credentials, but see no future because they're not getting the type of support within these school systems that they need. And quite frankly, they are so woefully underpaid, it's laughable. We have never regarded teachers in the manner in which they should be. And I think the notion that certainly we are caring about, you know, our children's future is a bunch of you-know-what, because certainly we don't prove it with our actions.
Pedro, as an educator, I'm wondering if, in fact, when you hear these kinds of things and when you hear people stand up, politicians and others often salute teachers, does that really stick to your craw to a degree?
Absolutely. The most important ingredient in education is the classroom teacher. We have a situation in this country where we have relied on gender bias for years to generate women as teachers. But now if you talk to most women, they have lots of other career options. So in too many states, teaching is not a first-choice profession, certainly not the first choice of our best college students, which means we're often not attracting our best students into teaching. And it shows in the results. If the Bush administration was serious about raising standards, it takes more than just testing kids. You actually have to look at who's teaching our kids, and they've done very little to address the supply of teachers.
Well, that's actually not true. This administration has lost incentive program launched incentive programs for individuals to go into the teaching profession as far as paying for student loans, going into specific teaching areas that there's a shortage of. I know that this happens in many states. California is one of them where there's an extreme shortage of teachers. Florida has a program, a first choice program, where they also provide student loan repayment assistance and incentive and bonuses for teachers, for individuals to go into the teaching profession. So it's unfair to say that we are not aware, or that this administration is not aware of.
All right, let me do this because let me do this, Tara. We can all agree that, let's just pick the Reagan administration for sake of argument, probably before then, that many administrations, not just this administration, have not done what they need to shore up the educational system in this country and provide a real living for teachers. Now, we can get away from the political argument with that agreement and stick to the idea of what we're talking about here, and that is the problem of teachers leaving within 5 years and having to start all over again, particularly those of quality. The average teacher, according to this survey, is said to be married, 43-year-old white woman who is religious. We should note that only 6% of teachers in the United States are African American and 5% are Hispanic, Asian, or another ethnicity. What does that say that we have, particularly in the United States and urban areas, when we're talking about teachers, 6% of all teachers are African American and 5% of people of color, Pedro, when you talk about diversity and wanting to make sure education is fair across the board?
It's a tremendous problem. In many of our cities, the vast majority of the children in the schools are children of color. And when you have this kind of imbalance in teaching, what you often experience is a large number of behavior problems because you're serving children with great needs, and many of the teachers lack the skills. In too many of the school districts, for example, in New York City, there's a deliberate policy of assigning the least experienced teachers to work with the neediest kids. Not because this works, but because they are so desperate to fill the classrooms. This is not a recipe for improving our nation's schools.
Well, and partly the teachers' unions are responsible for this as well, because they're, you know, we try to encourage merit-based pay in other areas, but the teachers' unions are extreme. They're set into certain formulas that haven't been working, and it's evidenced by what's taking place in the classroom.
That's very true.
Who is we? I mean, part of the confusion about what I'm hearing is that we're sort of politicizing something that, if you look at the bare facts, no one can deny. You go into any major urban center, you don't find black male teachers. You don't find black teachers. You find teachers woefully underpaid. You talk to any public school teacher, and they give you the same story. So I think we've got to really find a way to talk about this without throwing it in the realm of partisan politics. Because at the end of the day, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. What matters is whether or not our children get educated.
Well, that's true. Though, Walter, most people, teachers included, will tell you that, and you know this as well as I do, that teachers' unions over the years have had a very strong lobby, have been very strong in fighting against some of the things that most people, I think, might say it's time to take a look at least in terms of change.
I mean, I think in terms of instructional issues, you're absolutely right. But the unions have been fighting for improvements in wages and benefits
their
workers.
No doubt. I don't think anybody, and that's the catch-22 of many unions.
Exactly.
Okay,
I'm sorry. No, I'm
go
done.
Ahead. I'm just trying to get this third topic.
I'm done.
All right. Thanks, Walter. Appreciate it. All right. We'll take our move to what is going to be clearly yet another debate, and that is the movie The Da Vinci Code, highly touted, starring Tom Hanks. Ron Howard is the director. And what we are seeing now is the Catholic Church coming out suggesting that this book will seriously twist church history. And they believe, because most laymen do not have enough religious knowledge to separate fact from fiction, Tara Settmeyer, that this is going to be a huge problem when this movie opens.
I think that the Catholic Church really is in a tough spot because of their credibility has been undermined significantly with recent church scandals and certain levels of hypocrisy within the Catholic Church. And now here's another attack on Catholicism. Whether some people may see it as an attack, some people see it as fiction. However, Catholicism has been extremely influential in the world. And now with more and more access around the world to entertainment and media, it becomes very difficult. The lines between what's truth and what's fiction become blurred. And I think they have a legitimate concern. People have a tendency to latch on to what Hollywood presents to them because it's a more risque perspective of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a difficult position for the Catholic Church to be in.
All right, Pedro Noguera, here's the interesting point. I guess the biggest concern that the Catholic Church is raising with the Da Vinci Code is that because it says the book and the movie will say that Jesus Christ married Mary Magdalene and fathered a child with her, but the Vatican hushed up the truth. And, of course, the Catholic Church contends that Jesus was celibate. Here's the interesting point, though. There will be those who will debate the idea with the Catholic Church whether any of this is fact.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's kind of silly on the part of the church to get overly defensive about this, because I think, as Tara pointed out, they have a much bigger problem with respect to the pedophile priest to worry about than the Da Vinci Code. What I've seen from those who've read the book is that it actually prompts them to want to do more study and more research. Many people don't realize that the so-called Virgin Mary had children before Jesus was born. And I think these kinds of inconsistencies in the version of the gospel that many have been given, I think encourages more study, more research, and that's a good thing. The church shouldn't be opposed to people wanting to learn more about the history of the church.
Walter, as we see a growing a-religious community here in the United States, does this speak to, as Pedro suggested, an opportunity for those who really know little about religion just in general to do some study?
You know, I think it could, and I think the trepidation that many people have about organized religion and religious denominations is over the very fact that they themselves have not been clear on these issues. I mean, when you look at some of the church teachings, there are contradictions. When you look at the fact that, you know, I am a Christian, I grew up in a Methodist denomination, I always question, you know, the King James Version of the Bible, because I just figured that that had to be a politically edited document when you think of where it's coming from. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of confusion in religion. I think it's rather silly to make a fuss over this movie, because if you're going to stand on faith, then you have to be strong enough to say, no matter what is put out there, that my truth is stronger at the end of the day, and my faith will allow me to make sure that that truth is understood by the masses. So I think the church is actually doing a disservice to itself by entertaining this movie in this sense, in terms of creating, you know, a lot of hysteria over this one particular movie.
And also, for a long time, we in the African-American community have always debated the idea, the image, and the visual depiction of Jesus. These kinds of things are debated over and over and over again. And this, I would think, Pedro, is just one in the same.
That's right. And I think that those kinds of debates are very important. The role of the church during Nazism in Germany, its involvement in genocide in Latin America, these are questions that I think are of vital importance to the legitimacy of the church. And I would be far more concerned about that than Dan Brown's book.
Absolutely.
All right, I've got to stop us there, and I should note that for the last 2 days, we've been trying to get this text messaging of 411 of information for teens on sexual questions that has started in San Francisco. I promise we will get to it tomorrow. Pedro Noguera, Walter Fields, and Tara Settmeyer, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.